tonight we're going to do something a little different than we normally do. Last year, for the second time in my life, I had the opportunity to go on a Pesach program in a hotel for Pesach. I had never really done it except for once, right when I was an assistant rabbi in Shari Tfila many years ago. One of the Balabatim had a wealthy uncle who would take his entire family to a hotel in Italy for Pesach, and they wanted to bring a rabbi also. So they brought and they needed a rabbi who can get away for Pesach, and I was only an assistant, so the shul didn't care. And I had very few children at the time, so that I was ideal for the job because they don't want to have to pay for a large family. So they brought me to Italy for Pesach, but I was very young. I wasn't really attuned to all of the issues. I just knew that it was really nice. Then last year, we made a bar mitzvah right before Pesach, Shabbos HaGadol bar mitzvah actually, and my wife said to me a few months before that I could make a bar mitzvah and I can make Pesach, but I cannot do both in the same week. So I tried to find a place to go for Pesach that I wouldn't have to pay for, and I had the opportunity to go on a wonderful Pesach program in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. My children and wife begged to go back this year, and we're not going back this year, even though it was a wonderful program run by really, really great people. But I'm a shul rabbi, and I think that it's important for a shul rabbi to be in the shul, and if he can, and but it opened up a new world to me because I had never seen. I've heard a lot about these places. How many people here have been away at a hotel for Pesach? Okay, so you've seen a little bit of what goes on. So I compiled a list. I took this as sort of like a challenge. It was a mental list over Pesach, and then after Pesach, it became a physical list. And I compiled a list of potential issues, halachic issues, that can come up in a hotel setting on Pesach. Now, these are not all, I'm not saying that the program that I was on had all of these issues, or even that all of these issues are always a problem. I'm just saying that if the halachic man who looks at the world and is thinking about halacha in everything that comes up, can come up with a number of issues. Anyone want to guess how many issues I came up with, halachic issues that come up in a hotel over Pesach? So I came up with, first of all, two categories. I think it's important to categorize them. One category is issues that need to be dealt with by the program itself, by whoever's running the hotel. And then the other category are issues that should be avoided entirely or dealt with by religious people on the program and are often neglected on a variety of programs. I forgot to mention, tonight's shir should be Le'iloi Nishmat HaRabbanit Rut Bat Ahuva. So, Rabbanit Menashe, right? So, Neshama should have an aliyah. So, the challenge is Le'iloi Nishmat. So, which one is better, Yul? Okay, so the first category issues need to be dealt with. Program looking around and thinking about it, I came up with 19 issues, and the second category issues that should be avoided or dealt with by religious people and often neglected, I came up with an additional 14, and then I ran out of room on the page. So there are 33 issues that I came up with. So maybe I'll just run through some of them quickly, and you'll stop me if there's something that strikes you as interesting or as particularly touchy, or something that you think needs to be dealt with in a more significant way. So first of all, issues that need to be dealt with by the program. First, every hotel nowadays, every decent hotel nowadays, has motion sensors everywhere. There is a significant movement to go green and to have things automated, to not rely on people to remember to shut off lights. So even lights in hallways and everywhere. If you are in a hotel room, the room knows that you are in the room. There is a motion sensor somewhere, and even if you don't sense anything happening, you don't see anything happening. The motion sensor, usually there's something there that knows that you're there. And if not in every hotel room yet, at the very least, in the lobby and in larger areas, in the hallways, where there are cameras and motion sensors and things like that. So that's really a much larger issue than just a hotel issue. That's going to be an issue that already is an issue in many of our neighborhoods. When you just walk down the street on a Friday night and lights are turning on in front lawns and things are happening all over the place. So to go through all of the issues in the poskim right now and how they're makel in a variety of different circumstances would obviously take us a very, very long time. But let's just give some basic guidelines, at least according to some poskim. There's a basic concept called psik resha delo nichale. Most of the poskim in this kind of case would assume if you assume that it's a psik resha delo nichale, yeah, I guess most of the poskim would assume that many of the things that happen as a result of motion sensors are psik resha delo nichale, are things that are happening automatically that you're not necessarily interested in having happen. However, if you're walking down a dark hallway and it turns light, it's very hard to call that a psik resha delo nichale. That is something that is nichale. Psik resha delo nichale on a derabanan, we certainly have a lot to be makel with, because most of these lights are not incandescent bulbs, and very often whatever is being recorded is not being recorded in a permanent way. Very often you could probably knock it down to a derabanan. But if it's nichale, then you have a problem. So most of the good programs will try to take care of that. We'll try to take care of anything that you will recognize happening. Now, things will still be happening. Meaning, even, for example, even if you carry a cell phone, let's say, even if your cell phone is off, there's ways of tracking where you are based on your cell phone, unless you destroy your cell phone. The Israeli army could know where you are. My cousins in the army told me that they can't bring cell phones, and so even if it's off, they know exactly where you are. There are things that are tracking you. There are things that know where you are, even if nothing's actually happening. Rav Asher Weiss has an important kula about that, where he thinks that that's considered such an insignificant act that it's not even that anything's happening, that it doesn't even fit into the general category of malacha, of a creative act, and therefore as long as you don't know of you don't see anything discernible going on around you, that for the most part you could be making with these things. So a lot of times they'll either cover over the motion sensors if they have the whole hotel and they're able to do this, and they spend a good deal of time working on these things. But that's something that's a significant something that hotels need to deal with. And if you're at a hotel that they don't take over the whole hotel, then beware of that. That's something that you need to be aware of. Second thing that happens in a lot of places is automatic doors and automatic toilets in the lobby bathrooms. So that's a problem. If you're to wait till someone else comes down the hall and follow them, it's a problem. You should try to avoid such hotels. it's a problem. Now, if there's automatic doors, and in most lobbies of hotels, there's automatic bathrooms also. The sinks, the toilets, they have the now. It's everywhere. A friend of mine was in Israel once, and he was davening at the Kotel on a Shabbos, and he was walking back from the Kotel through the Mamila Mall, and he had to go to the bathroom. So he went to the bathroom, and he was standing at the urinal, and he was finished, and then he realized that the second it was Shabbos, and he realized the second he walks away, that the urinal is going to flush. So he was like, what do I do? His family's waiting outside for him, and he didn't know whether he was allowed to move. I found that Rav Belsky has a tshuva. I found a few tshuvas on the topic. Rav Belsky in the Shulchan Alevi has a tshuva on this topic. One could argue that too is a psik resha delo nichale on a drabban, because you don't care that it flushes after you. You're just being courteous to the next person who may care whether it flushed or not. So one could argue that it's psik resha delo nichale on a drabban. The sinks are psik resha delo nichale if you use the motion sensor to wash your hands. So that might be a bigger, that certainly is a bigger issue. And generally speaking, we would try to avoid any of these things if it is avoidable. So again, some hotel programs, certainly the one I was on, they were very good about this. They made sure to cover up all the sensors. And what happens if you cover up the sensors, my friend discovered when he was in the mall that day, is if you stand there long enough, the toilet starts thinking to itself, who is this guy? There's no way that it takes that long. And eventually it flushes itself. It doesn't actually think, but it eventually is programmed to flush itself if it's still sensing that you're there. So when they I cover up the motion sensor, ultimately it will just flush itself. So that's, but you try to avoid that. You try, if they didn't cover up the motion sensor, and you have a motion sensor hotel, if you have nowhere to go, so cover a brios and a drabanan, so we could say cover brios dochalo seisha b'torah means it's docha isurim drabanan, and it's a psikresha dolo nichale on a drabanan. So you have a lot to be makel with. But if you have another option, then you don't rely on those kulos. Ah, but my other option means that I have to walk up 5 flights of stairs to get to my hotel room that doesn't have an automatic toilet. But that's another option. It's not such a big deal. So you might miss the 7th course and only make it back in time for the 8th or 9th course. And then, who knows, you might even have room in your stomach for the tea room afterwards. So it's going to be... But that would seem to be something that a person should do. A third issue... Shabbos elevators and escalators. So escalators are not a problem. It's important to realize that. Escalators, the post can point out that the way the escalators, Shmir Shabbos Kolchasah Paskins this way, that the way escalators work is you're not really doing anything to the mechanism when you get on the escalator. It's not causing any more electricity or anything. But elevators work with a pulley system that's a little bit different. And elevators have several issues. First of all, when you go in, there are sensors in the doors so that the doors don't close on you. So there are sensors that are in the doorway itself. Second, when you're in it, your weight is going to determine how much electricity the elevator needs to run, because it has a certain it will react to the weight that's in the elevator very often. Third, someone's going to need to push the button to get you to the floor that you need to get to. So most of these hotels will set up a Shabbos elevator. Now, it's important to know that there are tzvei dinim in Shabbos elevator. When they call it a Shabbos elevator, there are two different types of Shabbos elevator. There's Shabbos elevator like you have in Eretz Yisrael, when you go to, not every place in Eretz Yisrael, but let's say you go to the Plaza Hotel, I don't even know if it's called the Plaza anymore, but they would have Shabbos elevators, and those Shabbos elevators, I believe, were made by the Institute for Halacha Technology, or Tzomet, or one of these places that works on technology problems, and actually adjusts the mechanism that the elevator uses to put it in a grumma or something in terms of the way the elevator operates. The other type of Shabbos elevator is what they call a Shabbos elevator when you're in the Ritz in Puerto Rico or something for, I don't know who's running the Ritz in Puerto Rico, I'm not saying, just giving as an example, for Pesach, and there's no Institute of Halacha and Technology coming down and adjusting their elevator. What they just did is they programmed it to stop on every floor so that you don't have to push any buttons. So that's a less than ideal type of Shabbos elevator. So if you're in a place that just has a Shabbos elevator that stops on every floor, so certainly for the elderly and infirm, that would be okay, because we're dealing with, you're not doing a maisa at all, it's your presence, and it's likely only the rabbanans that are being done. So certainly for the elderly and infirm, we would be makel if there's no better option. But for young, able-bodied people, they should take the stairs. And if you're on, I think, if you're on the 7th floor, so you take the stairs and you go up the 7 flights of stairs. You could use it probably if you're in a hotel for Pesach. The exercise is gone. I was makbid the whole time, even Chol HaMoed. I never took an elevator the whole time I was there, just because you're eating so much. You just need to move as much as you possibly can.
But
so that's
the third kind where they have the guy inside the elevator telling which floor you want to go to. That's even more of a problem.
Because that's direct Amir La'akum. Amir La'akum is an issue. There are two issues of Amir La'akum. There's an issue of getting Hanah from Lacha done by a guy, and there's an issue of Daber Dover. You're not allowed to have Dibor Shalchol, so you're not allowed to give instructions about a Malacha. So you can get around Daber Dover, let's say, by Remiza Shalom B'derech Tzivoy, which this isn't. That would be Remiza B'derech Tzivoy.
But he knows that it's Shabbos, and that's why he's in there, and that's why he's taking people.
Yeah, so you have it, and plus you're being nenef straight from his Malacha that he's doing for you. Now, speaking of the guy who was pushing the buttons, yeah. Speaking of anything you're not allowed to do, you're not allowed to ask a guy to do. The halacha is that you're allowed to do shvus to shvus. You're allowed to ask a guy to do an issur d'rabbanan for you b'makom mitzvah or b'makom tzorach gadol. So this comes up in a couple of other things that come up in hotels. For example, key cards. There's almost no hotel anymore that has actual hard keys that they use. So some of the hotels make an accommodation where the top block, you know, that where you can open it up a little bit, a couple of inches, where there's an attachment that you could attach onto that, that comes with a regular lock and key, that you can use that to lock your room, and that way they'll just disable the lock, or they'll tape up or disable the key card lock, and you'll just use this lock and key. If they have that, that's the best possible situation. A lot of hotels don't have that. They don't offer that. The people running the program don't want to invest in that. They lose the keys. It's too much of a hassle for them. So what they'll do is they'll have a guy standing on each floor to open up the doors for everybody. So there are a couple of problems with that. One problem is that even though, again, it's probably only a drabanan to put the key card in the door, but a shvus to shvus is only mutter b'makom mitzvah or b'makom tzorach gadol. So you're going to have to cheshbin every time you leave your room. Is this really a tzorach gadol? Is this really considered a makom mitzvah or a makom tzorach gadol? I don't know if you want to go through that cheshbin. Maybe it's not such a tzorach gadol that you'd be dafka in that hotel. Maybe you could be in a different hotel where they have a better system set up. So I don't know if that's a tzorach. Look, if you have the whole thing set up where you taped up the thing or you put something in the door to make sure that it doesn't lock, and then it accidentally closed behind you and it locked somehow, and it was so that's a tzorach gadol, a one-time thing to get back into the room. But to be running in and out of the room the whole time like that, I don't think that's considered such a tzorach gadol. Then there's some hotels that they'll say, well, what's the whole problem when you put the key in the door? One hotel I heard did this, and it didn't make any sense to me. The whole problem is that the lights turn on the door, and then it opens up the lock. So just put a piece of tape over the lights, and then you won't see the lights turning on. I don't understand what they were talking about. I don't even know, what does that accomplish? So he says, "Psikresh d'lo nichalei." Why is that psikresh? The whole locking mechanism is in the sidra banan, and that's nichalei. You're trying to get in. I didn't understand what that was even talking about.
The card itself is
muktzah. The card itself is likely muktzah. Yeah, the card itself is probably muktzah. Yeah, I would think so. You have a guy holding the card, and then it wouldn't be a problem. But the card itself is muktzah.
Could you say that?
It's a tragedy, but it's possible.
So the question is, I mean, you want to go inside, take a nap, or whatever, something which is be oneg for the Shabbat year, oneg beyond, if that called a Gadol?
Yeah, but you knew when you went there that you were going to have to get back in. I just don't think setting up the whole system where you're going to constantly be using that is a tzorach gadol. Meaning any given time, you could argue is oneg yantiv or simchas yantiv, oneg Shabbos, but you're setting up a whole system like that, I think, is a terrible, terrible way to set up a system. Another important thing, especially if you're in South Florida, is that a lot of the non-Jews that are helping to do these malachas at hotels are Jews. They're not really non-Jews. And they know that when they apply for the job, when they ask, are you Jewish? They're supposed to say no. And really, in fact, they are. There was a hotel in Arizona, I think, that the person who was the guy on the floor to open up the doors for all the Jews, they discovered in the middle of Pesach that the person was Jewish. So they fired him. And the person sued them for religious discrimination, that they discriminated against him because he was a Jew. And he won, because they did discriminate against him because he was a Jew. He lost his job just because he was a Jew. He was perfectly capable of sticking cards into doors, but they fired him just because he was a Jew. The program we were on Pesach, they had there was this waiter that was taking notes every time when we took our orders for meals. He was writing them down and doing all sorts of malacha for us. And my brother-in-law was there. I'm very bad at knowing who's a Jew and who's not. So my brother-in-law is like very good at this. So my brother-in-law says, out of nowhere, I thought the fellow was Hispanic. And my brother-in-law says, "You Jewish?" And the guy's like, I'm a Floridian. And my brother-in-law's like, "Yeah, you Jewish? Where'd you go to yeshiva?" And like, he's like, "Okay, don't tell anyone." Like, he went to yeshiva through by the seventh day of Pesach. He was learning Gemara with one of the yeshiva bachrim that was on the program and trying to be makariv him. And he said, "You just can't tell anyone. I really need this job." So a lot of times the non-Jewish help, especially if you're in a Jewish area, might really be Jews. So that's another thing that you have to be careful about. An issue that comes up in every hotel, either there for Pesach or Shabbos or Yantif. I'm not even getting into the kashrus questions. That's like so far beyond, You know, you just assume that if you go into a place that has a good hashgacha, just close your eyes and hope for the best. I had a friend. I have a friend whose father ran Pesach programs for many years, and he told me the father told me once that 80% of the Pesach programs are kosher. 50% of kosher Pesach also, but 80% are kosher. So not even touching the kosher issues. Candle lighting is a major issue in hotel or an issue in hotels when you're there for Shabbos or for Yantif. Normally, what they do is, because it's illegal to light a fire in a hotel room for good reason, it's a fire hazard. People, Rav Shechter was telling me that years ago, it used to be in Yeshiva University, they would have everyone light Chanukah licht in their rooms. And then there was one guy who was totally irresponsible with his Chanukah licht, and he lit the drapes on fire or something terrible. And Dr. Lamb said, okay, that's it. No more Chanukah licht in the rooms. Now you have to light downstairs. So the question is whether you yotze when you light downstairs. But you can't do it. You can't put yourself in, as unfortunately we're reminded every now and then. We were just reminded in a very significant way that you have to be very careful with these things. So the hotels have, for good reason, that you don't light candles in a room. So what do? They don't set up on the table. They set up a table off in the corner where no one even goes. And they dafka do it that way because they don't want children running around and pulling candles down and messing. So it's in a corner dafka where no one goes, where no one is ever going to use those lights. So that's not Neiros Shabbos. Neiros Shabbos is supposed to contribute to the Onek Shabbos. It's supposed to be to something that contributes to what you use on Shabbos. And it's supposed to be in an area that's somewhat private. You're not supposed to light in the most public area that's for everybody. You're supposed to light in an area that's yours, you know, on your Shabbos table, in your room. So it's very likely not a kiyum mitzvah at all, and it's very likely a bracha levatala if you make a bracha on the lighting of those candles. The better thing to do, even though Rav Moshe doesn't say this, Rav Moshe holds that you're not allowed to light an electric light, but the better thing to do, according to many, many poskim, is to light with electric lights in the room. Turn on the light in the room, light off to the side in the room, and make a bracha on that. If it's an incandescent bulb, for sure you can, and maybe even if it's a fluorescent, it's not so possible that you can't if it's a fluorescent. But certainly you should try to get a flashlight that has an incandescent bulb. Those are harder to come by now. Most of them are LEDs now. But if you could find a flashlight that's an incandescent bulb, or a little lamp they have like in the hospitals, the chaplain in North Shore, let's say, gives for the women to light Shabbos candles, it would come with a little incandescent bulb, and you can make a bracha. And generally speaking, there are poskim that say, if it's a plug-in, then maybe you can't make a bracha on it because you're relying on someone else. You're relying on the electric company to provide the power, and that's no good. Maybe he doesn't have a din of a ner. But most poskim assume that, I think, that Mori Varabi Shechter certainly assumes this way, that you can make a bracha on an electric bulb, and that would be fine. But you should then just realize that when you go to a hotel for Pesach, you will not be able to light candles on the second night of Yantiv, because you cannot turn on a light on the second night of Yantiv. You could turn on a light before the first night starts, but on the second night of Yantiv, you're out of options. And lighting the candles on the table is a brach levatala. I don't think that helps at all.
Is it much harder to then light, let's say, in your room, no looking in the bathroom where there's no motion, where there are no smoke detectors, against the policy to make sure no one knows about it?
I would strongly recommend against that. I don't think, if you have a tea light and you're going to sit there with it the entire time, so maybe that, if you're going to sit there with it the entire time. But I would never leave a flame.
Even if it's like on a, you know, granite counter.
Not in a hotel room. No, don't do it in a hotel. See, one of the Rabbanim sent out this week, a lot of Rabbanim have been sending out emails this week about fire safety and halacha, especially we have Yantif coming up, and people leave stovetops on for days at a time because that's what the halacha seems to require. So one of the Rabbanim sent out an email that if you're ever not home for a Friday night meal, don't light Shabbos candles, just light an electric light. So, what? Yeah, he said to do that. So I asked Rav Shechter, I saw Rav Shechter this week, and I asked him what he thought about that. He said his impression was that with Shabbos candles, people generally light in a safe area. Most of the fires that happen are a result of either electricity or Chanukah candles. Chanukah candles, people don't realize. They're lighting right near the drapes. They're lighting in a place they're not used to lighting. Shabbos candles, he thought it wasn't enough of a reason to stop the minhag of lighting with Neros, which I was shocked, because He holds that you can make a bracha on electric lights. He holds that if you make a bracha only on your candles, that could be a bracha levatal, that a woman, when she makes the bracha, should turn on the electric light in the room and then light the candles and say the bracha. And have in mind that it's on both, that it's on the light, because that's the main source of light. I was very surprised that he held that way. But certainly in the hotel, it's a real issue. Another issue that comes up is taking meal orders at lunch for dinner time. So you have hachana issues. The waiters come around; they want to know what you're gonna order for the next meal. But the next meal is gonna be after Yantif, and it's mechin from Yantif to Chol to tell them what you want, to already set up in advance what you want. Now you could argue that no, they're doing the hachana; you're not doing any hachana. They'll do whatever they do; that's not your business. But I think just even you're not even supposed to speak about what you're planning on doing later on in the day. It's dabar davar. You're supposed to dibur shel Chol. What?
All you're saying is what you want to eat.
What you want to eat later that night. So maybe you're not talking about doing malacha.
Yeah.
Okay.
Rabbi, you can put the watch timer on the platter?
What?
The watch timer, like.
Yeah, you could do that.
You do it, like, put it like the next morning to open the platter. Or...
Yeah, yeah. Right. That's not really our topic, but yeah, I would definitely recommend that. To put a. If you have
like
a hot.
At night, when you're sleeping, like.
So if you have a hot plate, first of all, make sure that it's wired properly. You know that it's licensed properly, but also to put a timer on it makes a lot of sense. I asked Rav Shachter if I should even hire. I wanted to hire a guy to walk around the neighborhood, house to house, to turn on people's stoves on Yontif morning if they wanted to cook and turn them off. I figured it's a shvus to shvus. And it's makom sakana or safek sakana, or it's sort of everyone's nervous about it now. So everyone's scared. Even if you're going to argue that it's such a tiny percentage that it's not sakana, but it's on everyone's mind. So it's causing everyone sad that they're gonna. So I thought. So he said, yeah. He said you could do that. He said he didn't think that there was a problem. I realize you don't have to hire a guy. Half the people have a guy in their houses that could do it for them. It's just have people share. You know, have go around to the neighbors. Everyone on each block have someone take care of that for people. But I think on Yantif you could ask a guy to turn on the fire for you, because it's Nisad Rabban on Yantif, not on Shabbos. On Shabbos is Daraisa, so you know, I'll ask a guy to turn on or up a fire on Shabbos, because that's Amir Lachem on the Daraisa. On Yantif, the whole you're allowed to raise a fire. You're just not to create a fire. Yesh Meyayin is an Nisad Rabbanon. So we're not allowed to do it ourselves, but a shvus to shvus, he asked the guy to do it for you. If it's a major tzarach, I think that's okay.
Even in the sense that you're planning in advance and you know that you're going to need it on the other day? So you
yeah, I think because of the carbon monoxide issue, I think, yeah, I would think
what's
so.
Bishl, turning on the oven for you.
Oh no, bishlakum I'm not worried about, because you'll turn on, you'll cook it. Don't let them put the food in the oven.
Like in all the kashrus places, there's always a Jew that has to turn on the oven.
Because that's the guy are cooking.
What?
So because the guy are cooking. If a Jew is cooking, a guy can turn on the fire. A Jew needs to participate in the cooking in some way. Ashkenazim are so mekel that we even allow a Jew throwing a little splinter into the fire, and a guy does everything else, and that's not a problem with bishalakum. So if you're going to actually do the cooking, and the guy is just turning on the fire, then it's fine, as long as the guy turns on the fire before you put the food in. Meaning, if you put the food in a cold oven and then the guy turned on the fire, so then the guy is doing the cooking. You did preparation, but the guy is doing the cooking. So you have to be careful about this. You have to know the halach of bishlakum also. Yeah, certainly.
If my family is not afraid of the whole fire situation, but let's say just to be extra safe, and I have a neighbor that's a goy, can I still tell them to come interrupt me? If my family doesn't go crazy about it, and can I still rely on them?
Yeah, Rav Meisha held you're allowed to turn it off yourself. He didn't write this in the tshuva, but he sort of wrote it in tshuva, because he wrote, I have a big secret about some big kula that I'm not telling you. He wrote it,
by gas,
yeah. So, and Rabbi Tendler said that he remembers when Rav Meisha and his father and his own father were both by him for Yantif, his father would guard the stove, make sure no one touches it, make sure everything's okay, until everyone went to sleep except for Meisha. Rav Meisha was up learning the whole time. Then his father would go to sleep, and then Rav Meisha would go and turn off the stove. So he said, Kaseda, that always happened. But nowadays it's a little trickier, because that was with the old pilots. Nowadays we have electric starters. So it could be that you're sparking electricity every time you pass by that part of the stove. So it's not so partial. Don't take that as halacha
l'maisa. Would
it be what?
Can I ask the
good
to come
and
do it in my house?
If your parents are okay with it, that's Yeah, I'm afraid for you. It'll make me feel better. Another issue that comes up is in hotels very often, they in regular hotel rooms, they'll have toilet paper and they'll have tissues. But when there are a bunch of Jews that are going to be there for a whole week and only using tissues, not using toilet paper, they don't want to give the Kleenex because, or the soft, you know, nice plush tissues, because that they'll go through it and it will ruin the plumbing in the whole hotel. It's going to be bad. So they give like the cheapy brands. Now, a lot of times with the cheapy brands, even the tissues, they're all connected to each other. Mm-hmm. So it's an issue of Korea also. So you have to be careful, make sure that you rip your tissues. The reason they have the tissues there in the first place is because you don't want to rip toilet paper. You end up ripping the tissues also. So that's another issue that comes up fairly frequently in hotels to be aware of. Another issue is the kashrus of Sifrei Torah. A lot of these hotels, they don't normally have Sifrei Torah. So what do? They borrow expendable Sifrei Torah that shuls aren't using. A lot of the expendable Sifrei Torah haven't been used in years. No one's checked them. So the kashrus of Sifrei Torah is questionable. So someone in the hotel should at least be well-versed in the halachos of the kashrus of Sifrei Torah. Go over that siman in the Mishnah Berurah first to make sure they know what's, because it could very well come up over the course of Yantiv. Another issue that comes up, since it's not set up for a shul usually, so they don't have a bima, they have a very low table usually that they're laying the Torah from. Hagba is very challenging, especially they're using these old Sifrei Torah that are often very, very large, and the Hagba could be a very challenging thing, so that's another issue they should try to, and someone Zaidi bought Hagba for his Zaidi, and you know they have like this 800 year old man trying to do Hagba in a 2 foot thing, and so it's often not an ideal situation. Also, the trustworthiness of the staff is an issue that the hotel program has to be cognizant of. Someone told me they were once at a hotel and there's a washing station. So the washing station had a giant urn. Had two big bowls of water. It had two big bowls of water. One bowl of fresh water and one bowl that you wash into. Each one was labeled, the fresh water and the what to wash into and the bowl to wash into. And then the hotel staff noticed that the fresh water bowl was empty and the other bowl was full, so he took the signs and he switched them. And then everyone who came to wash afterwards was able to. So he probably thought he was doing his job. I mean, he probably didn't think much of it. But the trustworthiness of the staff is an issue. One of the things waiters work for, they get some sort of salary, but it's mostly tips that they're making their money from. And there's an expected amount that you tip per person that they're serving per day, and they want you to be very happy with them. They never want you to wait for anything. They want to learn your habits so that on the third day of Chol HaMoed, when you come for breakfast, they'll already have exactly the kind of omelet you ordered the other 2 days waiting for you. They want to take care of you. So someone's going to scream, "I want ketchup. I can't find any ketchup. We're out of Pesach ketchup." So someone told me they're at a hotel once, and the waiter went, and he went to a different kitchen that was closed off for Pesach, and he found Heinz ketchup and he brought it to them. So you have to, because the waiter wanted to make them happy, you have to be careful about the program has to be careful about who they hire and to put the fear of God into the waiters. Another issue that comes up at hotels is beach service and umbrellas. On Yantif and Shabbos, you're on a hotel on the beach, you're not going to use the beach, so they have what's called beach service. Familiar with this? No? They have someone set up a chair for you on the beach, and they'll set up an umbrella and open the umbrella for you. So now opening the umbrella is probably an issur d'rabbanan to set up the umbrella. Now, to set up the umbrella, and because these are beach umbrellas, it's not like opening a hand umbrella, or an awning. It's a beach umbrella that you need to be koveya the thing into the thing and it snaps into place, and then they open it up for you. So that would be, let's say it's an issur d'rabbanan, for argument's sake. So let's say it's a shvus to shvus, but b'makom mitzvah? Sarah Kadal? I don't know. That seems a little sketchy. At an omelet station, a lot of the hotels, they have omelet stations, and at the omelet station, sometimes they'll have a burner underneath, to make the omelets, and sometimes the fire will go out on the burner. And if the fire goes out, a lot of times the people that are making the omelets don't know that they have to call over the mashgiach to relight the fire. If they don't call over the mashgiach to relight the fire and they do it themselves, then it's bishalakum. Whatever they're cooking in the omelet station is bishalakum. People have told me they've seen that happen at hotels. Another issue is who gets aliyos? How do they determine who gets an aliyah at the davening at a hotel? They sell the aliyos to some nice tzedakah, right? Everyone's spending thousands, tens of thousands, sometimes hundreds of thousands of dollars on yantiv. So they, you know, they auction off the aliyos and they'll give $36 for, you know, for Levi or whatever. So who gets this? So whoever buys the aliyah gets the aliyah. And a lot of times these are large families that are getting together, and families are complicated. And there are some members of the family that are very frum, and some not so frum, and some not frum at all, and some apikoris, and some this. So you have people are getting the aliyah. They want to get this person, they buy the person an aliyah. So the halacha is, Rav Moshe writes in a tshuva, a couple of tshuvas, but in one tshuva in particular, in Or Chaim Chelek Gimel, I think Simcha Beis or so, Rav Moshe discusses who you can give an aliyah to. And the halacha is, Rav Moshe says, that you can give an aliyah only to someone who believes in God. If a person is not bikaris, a person doesn't believe in Hashem, so they say the bracha, it's gibberish. The words don't mean, Baruch Atah Hashem doesn't mean anything when he says Baruch Atah Hashem. It doesn't have to be Shomer Shabbos. Person can get an aliyah if he's not Shomer Shabbos. Mechal Shabbos for Hesia is not, there's problems with the Yayin, there's problems with a lot of things, but an aliyah would not be a problem for Mechal Shabbos for Hesia. It may not be the most coveted thing, but it's not necessarily a problem for that. You could answer a main to a bracha. If he believes in God, he just has a Yetzer Hara. He likes to drive on Shabbos because it's much easier than walking, but he believes in God. He knows exactly which God he's rebelling against every Shabbos, but he believes in God. He's not an apikoros. You could answer a main to his brachas. I had this question once. I was Masada Kiddushin for a Talmud of mine, and his father was very close to the conservative rabbi, and he wanted to give a conservative rabbi a bracha under the chuppah. So I asked, I thought it shouldn't be a problem. I said, the conservative rabbi, he believes in God? He said, yeah, he believes in God. He just, probably doesn't, whatever, he's personally Orthodox, he believes in Torah Menashemayim, he just... he needs to make a living, so he decided to become a conservative rabbi. Apparently, it pays better. So I asked Rav Schechter. He said, it was a very interesting answer. He said, Rav Salvechik would have no problem with it. Rav Salvechik would have no problem because he can answer Amen to his bracha if he believes in God. He said, I personally wouldn't do it because I don't ever co-officiate with a conservative rabbi, and it wouldn't make me, and I think anyone who gets a bracha, that's co-officiating, so I personally wouldn't do it, but you don't have to listen to me, my Rebbe said that it's okay. So that was an interesting answer. But anyway, so giving an aliyah, so that's something that they should be aware of as well, and I don't know what the way around that really is. Another thing that comes up is an Eruv on Shabbos. A lot of the hotels set up an Eruv, some of them don't. First of all, it's a shaila whether it's better to or better not to in certain circumstances, depending what they're including in the Eruv. They want to keep the pool in the Eruv. Why do you want to keep the pool in the Eruv? So people could sit near the pool, or people could go in the pool. Now, going in the pool on Shabbos and Yantav is a whole separate issue, not going to get into right now, but it may be best to avoid the zilzal. Some people wouldn't carry out of the Eruv, but they would have no problem swimming on even Shabbos, but certainly on Yantav. Another thing that comes up in hotels, if you're at a gebruchs program where they serve gebruchs, they don't always label, or they very often don't label at all, what's gebruchs, what's not gebruchs. Who cares? If you're not a chassid and you don't care, if you're at a non-gebruchs program, you don't care usually. No, but it matters in terms of the bracha. You don't have a bracha. You have all this cake at the kiddush. First of all, if it's a non-gebruchs program, it's not kiddush makom suda. So it's very difficult to fulfill kiddush makom suda. And if it's a gebruchs program, you need to find the gebruchs cake to be able to know what bracha and to be yotzei kiddush makom suda. So it's a brachas issue and it's a kiddush makom suda issue. So those are the issues that the hotel has to deal with. We're not going to have time to get through everything over here. Issues that should be avoided by people who are there is you should try to make sure that the entertainment, don't assume just because the hotel is offering entertainment that it's kosher entertainment. I've heard stories. It's not always the most kosher. Certainly, comedians tend to be somewhat raunchy or whatever, inappropriate. They do all sorts of, they're always looking, especially if it's in some far-flung place. A lot of times, the best intentions, there are people that are mamash l'shem shemayim, the best intentions, and they hire an act that, people that they ask about in that location say, yeah, it's clean, and it's good, and it's good fun, and it's nice, and it's whatever, but they're not used to catering to a frum audience, so they have no idea what what clean and good, what tznius means. They have no idea. You know, they hire acrobats, and they're people that are, they'll tell us that they hired acrobats, and they were the most sincere, innocent people that run the program. They're mamish, and they came into the dining room, and they couldn't believe what was going on. There were these, like, half-naked acrobats doing all these contortions all right on top of the food, and it was like, you couldn't get your food unless, and they're like, oh my gosh, get those people down, get some clothing on them. And the acrobat then went and put what they determined was clothing on them, and it still wasn't, you know, so you have to be very careful in terms of, also, there's a lot of, obviously, mixed swimming that goes on, swimming on Shabbos and Yantiv. The TVs are very often on in lobbies, especially if they don't take out the whole hotel. A lot of times there's chametz in the lobby. They have a restaurant in the lobby, and you get hana'a from the chametz as you walk through the lobby. And that's, you know, if you, that smells really good. You know, the place I was at had a sushi restaurant, so it's only kidneys, and it doesn't smell. So, there's chametz in the lobby, and you're getting hana'a from chametz. There's a whole sugya in the second paragraph of Maseches Pesachim. Efshar v'kamechavein, if it's possible to avoid it, and you're having kavana for the hana'a, it's important to be familiar with these things. Probably most important of everything is the level of chilul Hashem that potentially can go on. The way people talk to the help in the hotel is so demeaning and demanding sometimes. I'm paying $50,000 for my family to be here. I could talk to you however I want. I could talk to you like you're an animal. And waiters, my brother-in-law, who was schmoozing with this waiter, and Makari of him, asked him, what do you guys think when you see like all this? And he said, we can't believe how much you could eat. he said, we just marvel at like how much food you're able to consume. I don't think that's a Kiddush Hashem. That's not a great thing. But certainly if you're, I want this now, when you hear the way people talk, it's a very, people cutting in line for food, and, the whole idea of waiting in line for food to me is like a whole, I won't do it. I'm not like in Russia, like with food stamps. The whole thing is like very difficult. But the cutting in line and being nasty to each other, not such a good thing. Another thing to be cognizant of is very often there's dairy food being served in the tea room right after a meat meal, because they keep the tea room open. The tea room is totally separate, and it was a meat meal, but a lot of people may have missed the meat meal, and so you have to be careful. Not just because they're serving it doesn't mean that you can eat it. Okay, there are a lot of other issues. To me, the biggest issue is chinuch, that you want to train your children to appreciate a proper Pesach, where there's a proper Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, and most importantly, to train them, at least for me, I'm already raising my kids in the Five Towns, no offense to the Five Towns, but like, I think there's enough indulgence in their lives that like, I just don't want them seeing so much indulgence, that there's just like, the way these programs work is that they want to make the customer happy, like they should want to make the customer happy, but they work in such a way where if you have a havamina that you might want something, then you had it 5 minutes ago. Before you even realize that you wanted it. I mean, they anticipate your every want, your every whim, and I just don't think that's healthy for children, to have their every whim anticipated, or adults, but especially for children, and then have it provided for in advance. Okay, I'm going to leave these lists. I made a few copies in case we didn't get to everything. Okay. Have a Chag Kosher V'Sameach, everybody. I'll see you in a few weeks.